In this week's episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about the benefits of SaaS. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 180. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
Well, this one will come out when we are in Vegas at MicroConf. So I, like you, haven't really gotten anything done in the past week because we're just wrapping up a bunch of final details. So that's really my only update for folks who are at MicroConf. Looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. You are just wrapping up stuff with MicroConf. And I do have to say I am really, really looking forward to my camping trip / vacation after MicroConf is over. And not necessarily because of all the work and stuff going into MicroConf. There's lots of other stuff going on too. But I really just need a vacation.
Yep. And you're going unplugged, right? Like into the desert or something?
I'm going to try and turn everything off.
We're going to be talking about the benefits and drawbacks of software as a service and choosing that for your app and whether you choose that over, you know, desktop or mobile or other things. Now, this came about because I was listening to Bootstrapped.fm with Andre Butov, Ian Landsman, and episodes 35 and 36, they had some long discussions about how SaaS is potentially overblown or overhyped, that it's not applicable for everything, that it's overused in some cases and all that stuff, that people are kind of defaulting. I think in the broader startup space especially, people are not really, the big funded companies are really going towards the recurring revenue and the SaaS stuff. So it got me thinking that there are some cases where it's a really good idea and there's some really good reasons to go with SaaS. And at the same time, there are some really poor implementations of it. And there's some times where you shouldn't go after SaaS. And so that's what we're going to be diving into today, the benefits and the drawbacks. And to kick us off, what we really wanted to do is kind of define what SaaS is. The further we got into it, even you and I have maybe a disagreement over certain apps, like is Dropbox a SaaS app or is it a cloud app? These are the five classifications I have. First is software as a service, right? This is a SaaS app. These are things like Salesforce, BidSketch, MailChimp, Hittail, Kissmetrics. They're web apps that live on a single server. They have multi-tenant databases and people come and pay a recurring, typically a monthly or an annual fee to access the web app. So it's basically a hosted web app. The next category is a desktop app. So this is Photoshop, an FTP client, just, you know, WinZip, all the stuff we think of as running on the desktop. And then the third category is server apps. So these are things that also run on a local computer. They aren't necessarily a desktop app in the way that we think about it. So it's something like maybe MySQL, right? Or Exchange Server. Or even think about Fogbugs, not the on-demand version, but the one you download and install. WordPress is the same way. You know, if you go to WordPress.org, you download something, you install it on a server. So it's not a SaaS app, but some people seem to be confused and think that anytime you have a web app, even if it's downloadable, that it's SaaS. And in this case, we're saying it's not. And then the last couple categories, one is mobile, you know, iOS, Android apps, the other ecosystems. And the last one is cloud. And I was putting things like Dropbox or Amazon S3 or Amazon's Cloud Player in this thing that I don't consider SaaS because the core interface is not a web interface.
Well, I guess I was just thinking, I mean, because we were discussing whether Dropbox, for example, should that be considered a desktop app or should it be considered a SaaS app? And obviously you came up with this third category. It's kind of a cloud app. And I think kind of differentiating it makes a lot more sense than specifying it as strictly a desktop app or, you know, a SaaS app. But I look at something like Dropbox and I say, well, I guess I, in some ways I am paying for the software because really I'm just trying to synchronize my files back and forth. So I use the free version. So to me, I don't think of it as SaaS because I don't pay for it. I don't know as I really think of that as SaaS. And I think that's more because of the web interface, I'll say. But like S3, for example, that's online storage. So that doesn't necessarily, yes, that's a subscription model, but I don't necessarily think of that as SaaS. That's more like a hosting fee.
Right.
If that makes sense.
So you are agreeing of like pulling these out of the SaaS category into something. I called it cloud. And it seems like these things are kind of a lot of them are storage based and they have recurring fees. Amazon doesn't have a recurring fee. It's usage based, right? It's not a flat recurring. Dropbox does have a recurring fee.
Yeah, I don't think I have a problem calling Dropbox a SaaS app of some kind.
Well, is it SaaS or is it desktop?
Like I said, I think putting it in its own category because it kind of bridges the divide because you do install it on your machine, but you know, there's components that operate out of the cloud, which without those, it would be kind of useless.
Yep. And see, that's how I see the difference here is that if you install Photoshop or you install just a simple desktop Microsoft Word, you know, something that installs, I know they all have these cloud components now that have been retrofitted in, but you can use them completely offline and there's no drawback to it. Whereas you can't use Dropbox or Amazon S3 or Amazon's Cloud Player, which is their music service. But the core thing is that you can stream it from anywhere. And so that's why I've created this fifth category of cloud that I want to kind of differentiate between what we're talking about today, which is SaaS, right? And these are two different things.
The one thing I would point out, though, is that for something like Dropbox, they do have a local LAN sync, so you don't actually need the cloud for it.
Right.
I think that's why it's so confusing as to how to categorize it, because they have this LAN sync where even if you're completely disconnected from the internet, you can still sync between two different machines.
Right.
So at that point, is it cloud? And it's like, well, kind of. It's over the network, but it's not necessarily outside. When you look at something like that, I mean, from Dropbox's perspective, you would rather people do that because then the data is not hitting your servers more than once, or you know, people aren't hitting your servers.
Yeah. Now, I bet 99.9% of Dropbox users are not using that. And the real Dropbox that I guess I'm referring to here is the one that needs the internet. One of the benefits is that you don't have it local. You know, if the building burns down, you don't worry about your data.
Right, but this just operates in the background. It's what I mean is it's a feature where it's just there's a copy of the file locally. Why go out to the internet and pull it down if you can pull it from somebody's machine nearby that it's all over the local network?
So it's a form of caching then.
Kind of, yeah.
But the cloud is still the premier or the first
kind of like
class
citizen. Kind of like a master copy of it.
I think it's still a cloud app of some kind.
Yeah.
These ones all seem to be API-based. You know, if you think about it, like Dropbox, you could really think about it as just storage somewhere and then a bunch of different ways to get at that storage, right? There's like 10 different UIs based on your platform. There's all the mobile versions and all the desktop versions and a web version and all that stuff. S3 is similar, right? Amazon Cloud Player, similar. There's a bunch of different desktop and web versions and mobile versions. I think that's where maybe cloud comes through, where it's a little different. SaaS, I think, is web. The web is the primary interface. Even if data is coming in from tracking code or from other APIs or other things, the primary way that you get at that data is you go to a website and you log in. And that's, I think, the differentiating thing that I think about when I'm looking at these two categories.
And I think that's probably partially where SaaS kind of came from. I mean, because you look at something like Basecamp or Salesforce, and that's historically where these things came from. So when you think SaaS, you immediately think web application.
Right.
I like having cloud as kind of its own separate category because it sort of implies that there's this other category that, yes, it's sort of SaaS, but there's also local components that may operate independently sometimes, but for the most part, they really need to interact with that piece that's out in the cloud that you may very well pay a subscription service for.
Right. And, you know, I don't like that cloud is such a buzzword and everybody's using it these days, but I do think it's a decent explanation of that category. So let's move on a little bit and look at, I had one thought on why SaaS is being so dramatically adopted. Like it really has been this upward trend. And if you look back into around the year 2000, there were probably just a handful of SaaS apps. It just was so hard to build really good apps that could even come close to mimicking a desktop app. And then as the, you know, as Ajax and browsers and coding technology on the web got better, 37 Signals becomes popular, Salesforce, you know, kind of pioneers through it, Constant Contact. I mean, there were these really early riders in this SaaS market. And I remember seeing them early on and thinking, wow, I would never do that, right? I don't want my data stored out on their server. Boy, I have to pay every month instead of, you know, I could just host it on my desktop box here. I remember hosting like an email server just so I could send out small email blasts because I didn't want to pay the $20 a month or whatever to Constant Contact. But the thing is as these things have gotten cheaper, they've gotten more reliable. And as I have multiple devices, SaaS has really taken off because it gives you access to that stuff from everywhere. So I think a lot of the desktop apps and a lot of the paradigms that we saw in the 80s, 90s, and the early 2000s are now, have now been moved or are moving to the web. So in the old days, you'd buy like, you know, a proposal, you download a proposal software, you install on your desktop and you build it. Now you'd go to a place like BidSketch. In the old days, I would think you'd download Longtail Keyword Tool and install it on your desktop. And now you might go to something like Hittail that's all in the cloud. So there is definitely a trend and potentially a faddishness. And I think that that's where there is some backlash. I think people could be pushing into SaaS for the wrong reasons, taking a look at the benefits and not think about the drawbacks, or just overextending themselves into it.
For the benefits and the drawbacks, I mean, there's two different perspectives to look at. I mean, first one is from the perspective of the user, and the other one is from the perspective of the developer. And those two things can be wildly different. I mean, something that is good for the user may be bad for the developer, and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. So let's dive into those. Let's first talk about the benefits of SaaS over other forms, like installable apps, from the user's perspective. The first one is that there is no installation. And I don't know about you, but I change laptops now every 18 months. I have a bunch of different devices. I have multiple desktop, multiple laptops. And so to not have to install something and keep a DMG file or an EXE file, depending on your platform, keep that handy or else have the login so I can go back and download it when I download my next version. Is it even going to be compatible with the new OS? All that stuff goes away when you're, you know, using a SaaS app from a user's perspective.
I cheat on that front because I just take full drive snapshots and back them up. So if I ever have to reinstall my machine, I just lay the image back down and I don't have to worry about it. But
right.
I think that's partly because I know how to do that stuff because I've done it for so long. So to me, it's not a big deal. But I think that most people in general probably don't necessarily have that knowledge.
Yeah, so that's one way around it. But obviously, like you said, most people aren't going to do that. Next benefit of SaaS from a user's perspective is there's no upgrades. So stuff is just upgraded in place, right? The web app is there. It's always new. It's the newest version. Hopefully they're continuing to work on it and fixing bugs as they come up. Whereas if you're on a desktop or a server and you have an old version, the upgrade process can be and will be at some point a big pain, and it'll take a bunch of time. If you have a bug or you have a security vulnerability, you have to drop everything you're doing and you have to do an upgrade. And if that breaks things, if the data changes, it can be a hassle. And this all goes all the way from server apps that I've had to maintain to desktop apps. Like if I would upgrade to a newer version of like Photoshop, of Microsoft Word or whatever, you have all these files that might now be incompatible. Some of them get screwed up during the upgrade. With QuickBooks, where is your data? Where does that live? iTunes is the same way. Like when I would move from one laptop to another, just getting that data was always the biggest hassle of the move, was trying to find like the QuickBooks file, make sure I had everything in the iTunes library. And so not having to upgrade and not having to maintain the local files to maintain your state is definitely one of the pluses that I see for SaaS.
Well, I think that there's a difference between maintaining your files and kind of the title of this particular point, which was no upgrades. And I'll give you a prime counterpoint for it that we've actually run into: PayPal's upgrade for all of your data to the new PayPal interface.
We have not done that because I'm too scared. But that's PayPal. See, that's two things. One, it's PayPal, and I don't trust that they're going to do a great job with it in V1, that it'll get better over time. And two, this is like something they've been rewriting for years. It's a huge upgrade that they are like actually migrating data. And if you don't know what we're talking about, if you log into your PayPal account, some people are seeing this thing that says migrate to the new PayPal. And I think they've written a whole new UI. I'm sure it's going to be cool. They're mucking with data at that point. If you think about what's your experience with most SaaS apps, the ones that work pretty well, you don't even know that they've moved, that they've added features. You don't even know if they've changed the backend data model because they've just taken care of it.
That is the general rule, I think, for most SaaS apps. They do upgrades, and they can do an upgrade in the middle of while you're using the software and you just don't notice because yeah. They've basically got, you know, a switchover mechanism where you just don't even notice. I mean, you're suddenly using the new version.
Right. And it's not that way every time, not for every SaaS app, not for every user, right? You run into some issues. But by and large, for me personally, the experience of not having to upgrade software anymore is a big plus. And I think for most consumers, most people who aren't heavily, you know, technical, I would say it's probably a plus for them as well.
Yeah, and I think there's two reasons for that. One is, you know, how many different applications does any given user or given company have that they would need to upgrade on a regular basis, and what is the schedule of those upgrades? I mean, if the software does not upgrade very often, then it's probably not that big a deal. So, for example, something like, you know, Word only comes out every couple of years, or, you know, SQL Server, for example. But then you have other things to take into account, like service packs and security patches and things like that. So I think those things kind of create a differentiator a little bit. But yeah, I mean, obviously not having to upgrade the SaaS apps is something that is attractive for most companies.
The next benefit was when you get a new computer, there's no reinstall. There's no looking for that installation file. There's no trying to find your data and moving it over and making sure you get everything.
Or your license key. God, that's the worst. Yeah. Like when you have to track down all your license keys for everything.
Right.
It's a nightmare.
The next benefit of SaaS for the user is the lower upfront cost. Since it is a subscription, you may not have to drop $300 or $400 one time. Maybe you can pay $15, $20 a month for it, even out that spending over time.
Hopefully leveling out your total cost of ownership. And if you go and sign up for a piece of software that really just isn't working out, then you haven't just sunk a couple thousand dollars into a piece of software that becomes shelfware because, you know, it just didn't work out for you. I mean, you can at least try things out and it costs you a lot less initially to get started with it.
All right. Our next benefit for users is that SaaS apps accessible from most devices. So I work on sometimes on a desktop, sometimes I'm on someone else's laptop, sometimes I'm on mine, I'm on my iPhone, I'm on my iPad. Frankly, sometimes I'm at a public computer at a hotel and my data is accessible from all those places. And that's a perk that you don't have with something like if I have my accounting in QuickBooks on my local machine, even if it's on a network drive, unless I've made that accessible from the outside world, which obviously I wouldn't recommend from a security perspective, then you can't get access to your data sometimes when you need it on the road. I know a SaaS app's not ideal when you're logging in from a mobile browser, but still, I've done it and it works.
Right. If you're using a password manager, though, then you're kind of screwed.
No, au contraire, sir. Now, if you use, I think it's LastPass that has, they have a browser and the passwords auto-populate in it. So it's the right. LastPass browser. I think tying with this accessible from all devices is that multi-user capabilities are easily built in. Now, that's not to say that they're free, but with things, you know, I'm thinking of like trying to share QuickBooks files in the old days or trying to share Word docs. You'd like email them around or you would put them on some share drive and then two people would open them at once and things would crash. Whereas with the SaaS app, ideally, if you have a team or you have multiple people who need to look at your accounting or who need to work on a single doc, the collaboration is a lot easier to do and it's kind of handled for you, assuming that the developer has built it.
That's a very subtle differentiator there between multi-user versus collaboration, because just having multiple users doesn't mean that collaboration is easy.
That's true.
I'll say.
Right. Like real-time collaboration is a whole other thing, but yeah.
Right.
I'm just saying multiple people at least being able to kind of edit and view stuff, maybe not at the same time.
Just being able to collaborate on the same data set. That's the important piece of it. It's not just having multiple users. Because I think with QuickBooks, for example, on the downloadable one, you can have multiple users, but it doesn't really do any good.
And the second to last benefit from a user's perspective is that your data is stored for you and it's backed up for you. And you don't have to worry about having crash plan or other things running locally. You don't have to worry about a backup not running and losing your accounting data or losing a bunch of Word docs because, in theory, the SaaS app that you're entrusting them to is taking care of the backups and they have that all handled. Now, we'll look at the drawbacks in a second, and one of the drawbacks is the potential of that not happening. But assuming it is and it's a reputable company and they're getting stuff done, it does take some of the burden off of your shoulders as a user.
And the last benefit is that companies who offer SaaS apps have to continually earn your business or you can leave at any time. So if you are running into issues or you have bad experiences with their support or with their software, because of that lower outlay of cash up front, the cost of switching for you, the monetary cost of switching to you but it's a lot less than it would be than if you were to invest a whole ton of money up front into this solution that ultimately you find out doesn't meet your needs.
Let's dive into some of the drawbacks of SaaS for users. We have quite a few of those as well. The first is recurring charges. And depending on how long you use an app, it may be cheaper to pay that big upfront fee than to pay that fee every month. And I know that some people just don't like subscriptions, right? They don't want to pay the monthly fee and they'd prefer to just kind of plunk it down and be done with it.
Yeah, I know people who have gone out and specifically purchased the installable version of a piece of software because they didn't want to pay for the recurring charges. And interestingly enough, one of the founders of Atlassian had kind of talked a little bit about whether or not you should do a SaaS version of something versus a one-time charge for it. And his differentiator was essentially, does the app become more valuable over time? And if the answer to that is yes, then you should charge a subscription fee for it. And if the value of that drops over time, then you shouldn't. You should get all your money up front. And I thought that was a really insightful mechanism for determining whether you go more towards a SaaS model or more towards a one-time fee for a piece of software, or for anything for that matter.
Another drawback of SaaS from a user's perspective is, frankly, web apps are often not as powerful as desktop versions or downloadable versions of software. It's simply because the desktop has a decade or two of programming, the APIs are stronger, it's local, so things can be faster. You know, if you're going to do heavy image or video manipulation, there's just a lot of cases where building a desktop app is actually better from a usage perspective when you're actually inside the app working on it.
Some of it has to do with the processing capability. Some of it's just a matter of what's possible in the web in a cross browser mechanism versus what's possible on a desktop, because with a desktop, typically you're deciding what the operating system is going to be that you're developing for. You can say, okay, I'm only developing for Mac, or I'm only developing for Windows. And if you start going down the road of developing for both, a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times, the complexities of having two different versions of the same piece of software, it's different skill sets, it costs a lot more in terms of time and money and implementation than if you only chose one platform. And you're essentially limiting the scope of what you're going after.
And I think this gap is narrowing over time. Certainly 10 years ago, there was a huge gap between what you could do on a desktop and in a web app. And that's smaller now with just all the web technologies, Ajax and front-end stuff that's come about. But still, you see older web apps, especially like you log into PayPal, it is grindingly slow. I mean, you're not even trying to do anything exotic, and it is painful to use the web app. Someone actually built a desktop front-end for PayPal where you would download and install it, and then in the background, it would check every X minutes, and it would download all your transactions so that you could then actually search them and not have to go get a cup of coffee while you waited for the transactions to appear. It's a pretty clever idea of basically outfitting a desktop interface over what is now a pretty legacy app.
Another drawback of SaaS over an installable piece of software is that it costs you a lot more to switch in some cases. And the real issue here is that if you're trying to switch from one application to another, if you have a desktop app that you're switching to another desktop app, then you can run them side by side. And you don't have to worry about importing all of your data in one shot. And you also don't have to worry about how am I going to go about doing this without paying for two different subscriptions. Because with a SaaS app, you literally have to dump all of your data, get it over to the new system, get it in there, and make sure that everything's working. And that can be a huge undertaking in terms of time and effort to do that. But if you have two desktop apps and you're switching from one to another, you can move some of the data over and just the stuff that you need that's kind of like your active working set. And the rest of it, you can leave in the old app. And if you ever need to go back to it or, you know, moving forward, you need to get at it, you just fire up the old app and you can get to it. But with SaaS, that's a lot more difficult. You really need to kind of bite the bullet if you don't want to be paying both of those subscription fees at the same time.
The next three drawbacks are all interrelated, and it's privacy of your data, security of your data, and backups of your data. And so privacy is someone else able to access that data? Is this other company, since it's not living on your premise, are they able to look at that data? Security, is it going to get hacked? Is your credit card or other sensitive data going to get stolen? Because you aren't now in control of that security, and you're entrusting that to a third-party SaaS provider. And then backups. Are they actually doing backups? And are they actually going to be able to recover your data? Or if they go down and everything's gone, you really didn't have necessarily an opportunity to at least be responsible for that. And so people who like to have more control over it and don't want to entrust it to a third party, these are three pretty major drawbacks for users.
I think all three of those boil down to one thing. It's like, do you trust the vendor, you know, in terms of the privacy, security, and backups? I mean, do you trust that they're doing the right things? And have they told you what it is that they are doing so that you do have that trust in their process?
And then the last drawback is too many logins. I hear people complaining, you know, I have 50 logins or 100 logins to different SaaS apps, and that's just a pain. So I think there's more of a minor inconvenience that can be solved with a password manager, like 1Pass or LastPass.
Yeah, I have over 500. It's ridiculous.
Wow. Oh, in your password manager?
Yeah, just in general. I have over 500 different logins.
That's crazy.
And that's probably on the low side.
That's another, the whole password issue needs to get solved. That's not the right way to authenticate anymore. Like, somebody needs to figure out a better way to do that. Because username password thing is just, it's too easy to hack. Nobody remembers them. You know, unless you're using a password manager, people use the same one over and over, and there's just major security issues with it. So I'm hoping that someone will fix this in the next few years, come up with a major innovation in that space. So now let's dive into the benefits and the drawbacks from the developer's perspective. So this is the founder or the person who's building the software. What are your benefits? What are your drawbacks? And let's start it off with one of the big benefits that's always mentioned is no installation support. And so if you have a desktop app or you have a server app, everybody who does a free trial, you have to support them. You have to give support to people who may never pay you. And I don't know if you've ever logged into a customer server that is completely catastrophically in bad shape with all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But even if you have an app and you've tested it on all the platforms over and over, it works fine when it installs for you, but they go to install it on their 20-year-old server running Windows 95. You have to then help them, or else you just kind of, A, you get a bad rap, or B, you're just never going to make the sale, right? And so not having to deal with that as people are installing and trying to get some value out of your software is a major upfront time saver that is, you know, I would say is a benefit for SaaS for developers.
Just over the past couple of weeks, I've talked a little bit in the past about the desktop version of AutoShark. I had a request to support installing it and running it on Windows XP. And I'm just like, unless you have a lot of money to spend on this particular thing, it's probably not going to happen.
Yep, exactly.
And plus, you have all these conflicts that you could run into on somebody's machine just because they've got other software, or if it's not like something where you're hooking into IIS or Apache or something like that, if you're opening your own ports, for example, you could run into port conflicts or other services that just shut things down. So, for example, I've seen a lot of antivirus software that will just say, hey, I don't trust your software, and it just shuts it down. I mean, I've seen it do that before with just the installers. It just says, I don't trust your installer, and boom, done. It just kills it.
Yeah, we used to spend a lot of time, you know, when .NET Invoice was selling at its peak, I would spend a lot of time doing support and troubleshooting people's servers, and I'd log in, and it was just crazy the setups they had and how old they were and how many, just how poorly it was set up. And yet it's my responsibility as the owner of my product to be able to figure out how to make that work. And so we would invest hours into software. People had bought it, and it was kind of like, if you say no, or you just say, your server's too screwed up, then they just say, all right, then give me a refund, you know, because we had a 30-day refund policy. So you're basically saying, I don't want to invest this time here, but I know that money's going to basically come out of my bank account if I don't. So I always struggled with that. I know that as you hit scale, it might get a little better, but that's definitely one of the drawbacks of having to install stuff. And I think tying into this is upgrade support. Whenever we'd release a new version of .NET Invoice, or if you release a new version of a desktop app, you then have a lot of customers that are upgrading all at once. And so you can have several thousand people who are now running into issues, whether it's their data, or whether it's an incompatibility with their OS or something like that. So upgrade support from the developer perspective can also be a big burden, you know, especially when you only do upgrades, say, two or three times a year. You release a new version, and it's like, boom, go ahead and just knock off the next week or two just to help people get set up with that.
Just to be clear, I mean, this is something you can, in some ways, run into if you're hosting a SaaS app, just because in some cases you are going to have to move or migrate somebody's data from kind of an old version to a new version or something. I think that the headaches are significantly less than if you've got a installable component that runs on their desktop, because then you've got dependencies to worry about as well.
The next benefit is that troubleshooting, bug fixes, all that stuff, it's easier because everyone's using the same code base, and it's easier to reproduce errors. When you have that single web server and everybody's using it, it's pretty rare that we are not able to reproduce an error that someone's run into. It only tends to be browser plugins and that kind of stuff. But overall, troubleshooting bug fixes, the fact that you can release bug fixes instantly if it's affecting a lot of people is a huge plus. Whereas with a desktop app, you have to roll out a new version and notify everybody, and then they get upset. You know, if you do that too many times, people start getting really upset about it. Whereas with SaaS, you can just do it silently in the background. You fix the stuff, you're improving the software constantly, and no one really needs to be bothered with it.
I think the other benefit is that you own the platform itself that it's installed on, so that you can hook into it and troubleshoot stuff directly on the server. And there's only one place to do it. You don't have to go to three or four different places in a customer's environment with, you know, what, as you said, can be totally screwed up machines. And you also don't have to worry about VPNing in. You don't have to worry about any sort of security or firewall issues with that sort of thing. If it's your server, you kind of control everything.
And the last benefit we have from a developer's perspective is the recurring revenue. It's that you don't start each month at $0 in revenue. You know, you're really always chasing the next sale. As I saw back in like 2008, 2009, somewhere, .Invoices revenue cratered 80% in 1 month when the kind of the recession hit. And that was a big wake-up call. I already had some recurring stuff, but I realized, boy, I really want to double down on recurring businesses so that that doesn't happen when I'm really, you know, paying employees and I'm really reliant on that revenue. And so I know, you know, there's both sides to recurring revenue. Some users may not like it, but from a business perspective, from a founder's perspective, this is the holy grail. And this, I think, is the number one reason that so many of these Silicon Valley and funded startups are heading into this market, is because of the recurring revenue and not having to do the enterprise sales stuff of get these huge contracts and chase them down and get these big revenue spikes. The recurring revenue really is, it's a good way to go.
Well, I think that's the point, though, is that it takes out the revenue spikes and evens out your cash flow. And you can see generally much further in advance if your revenue is starting to trend downwards. So if your revenue craters 80% in 1 month, I mean, it's really hard to see that coming. But if you start seeing significantly higher numbers of people kind of falling out of your funnel or cancellations, things like that, you can keep an eye on it a little bit better, I think. And the other thing I think is that if a recession hits, or something mass market comes into play where people are going to stop paying for stuff, they're not going to make capital purchases anymore. They're going to pay ongoing expenses, but they won't necessarily make new ones. That's the kind of thing that you probably ran into. It's just people stopped paying for new stuff. But if they were already paying for it, they're loath to get rid of that. They kind of cut all the new purchases first. And then if it's an ongoing issue, an ongoing economic meltdown, they will start cutting back on other things, but they won't do that right away. So for example, when the economy tanked, consulting was the very first thing to go because that was something that people were actively paying more money for.
All right, now let's look at some drawbacks of SaaS from a developer's perspective. The first one is that you have to maintain uptime, and the downtime is a really big deal, right? This is a lot more complex than releasing an app into the wild. Once it's installed on your user system, it's their responsibility to keep it up, to maintain the data, to keep the server running. But with SaaS, it's your responsibility, and this is non-trivial unless you are technical or you have someone who is solid at technical stuff and you're able to take care of the backups and you're able to really maintain that uptime to a certain level. You're not going to last as a SaaS provider.
I think this is one of those things that when people are first building their apps, they probably spend a lot of time on because they're like, I don't want this thing to go down. It's got to be rock solid. And I've seen people spend lots and lots of time. I've done it myself on making sure that the service is going to be up almost 100% of the time. And that's really hard to do, first of all, just from a technical perspective. But at the same time, like, there are going to be times where you just need to do some scheduled downtime and there's nothing you can do about it. But I think that that's one place where people spend probably far more time, especially early on when a minimal number of customers would be impacted by downtime anyway.
Another drawback from a developer's perspective is that you have an obligation. Once you launch a SaaS app and people are using it, you can't just walk away from it or abandon it. It's obviously not great if you build a desktop app and do the same thing, but at least people can continue to use it and get value out of it. If you walk away from a SaaS app, it has a limited lifespan. Either the server's going to have an issue at some point, it's going to get bugs, it's going to get security flaws, it just needs maintenance, or else this thing will run itself into the ground a lot faster than a desktop app. So there's an obligation there. The worst thing you can do, it's not to get zero customers, it's to get like 50 or 100 customers and then want to walk away from it, because you're kind of letting those people down. They've invested in you, they've believed in your app, and now what are you going to do? Just tell them go, you know, spend their time and migrate to another platform or something. I mean, there's an upfront commitment, I think, when you launch a SaaS app that is probably not as important as with a downloadable and installable app. Next drawback of SaaS from a developer's perspective is platform and browser compatibility issues. And this is basically the troubleshooting factor of if someone is using a crazy browser on a Linux system, or they have privacy plugins or cookie blockers or ad blockers or all kinds of stuff. This is where it gets complex, and if you can't reproduce it, it does become kind of a pain. That's probably the most complex kind of bug fixing and bug tracking stuff that we've seen, trying to reproduce things where people have weird configurations. Luckily, it doesn't happen very much, not nearly as much as I saw when I was, you know, installing downloadable stuff for customers.
Yeah, I mean, this is where some of the issues coming up with the minimum version number for different browsers that you support, and then just the sheer number of browsers. I mean, are you supporting Firefox? Are you supporting Opera, Chrome, IE? What versions of IE? The compatibility issues between them, and understanding what versions of jQuery or what different plugins could potentially impact your software. That can be not a huge undertaking, but it can be a big deal for what you're trying to support, and it's costly in terms of time to troubleshoot those. Once you figure them out, it is hopefully helpful moving forward as you kind of scale up the company and get more customers. But initially, those interactions are going to be, in some cases, long and protracted and just difficult to get through.
This is definitely a drawback, but the thing I like about it, because we had something with someone who used an IE7 or IE8 with Drip, and they ran into something. It might have been Hittail, actually. And we went in, and it took like 4 hours we had to get a virtual machine set up, this whole thing. But when we finally figured it out, it was a weird thing in IE, and we fixed it. And now if anyone else comes along with IE8, it's fixed for them because we have one version of the code. And that's where the benefit is of it's always such a hassle with desktop installation stuff because you have to deal with their configuration. And once you fix it, it's not fixed for everyone. So you may have to do things multiple times.
When you're doing that type of thing, and this kind of leads into the last drawback, which is that, when you're interacting with those customers, it's an opportunity for you to either lose a customer or gain their loyalty. I mean, customer support is really, really key when you have a SaaS app, because every single time you interact with a customer, if you leave them with a bad taste in their mouth, they can say, you know what, I'm really tired of these guys. I'm just done. I'm going to leave. And then you've lost that revenue for that customer from that point forward.
I mean, I think this is something that people don't always realize, but people can leave SaaS apps pretty easily. It's definitely a benefit for the customer, I think, that customer support is so critical with SaaS. So I think kind of to wrap us up and summarize, you might be thinking, listening to this, so when should I make something a SaaS app? When should I make it a desktop app or a downloadable app? And I like to think about it on kind of three distinct categories. The first is functionality. Like, is the functionality better served by making it a desktop app or a mobile app or some type of cloud app? Then do that. But if it's better served as a web app, then go that route. The second is the market. Is the market that you're going to be selling into, are they willing to go subscription? And are they willing to pay a price that makes this thing maintainable? Because B2C SaaS apps are really, really hard. B2B, not so difficult. So think about the market and look at that aspect of it. And the third one is, do you have the expertise? Do you have the experience, or do you have the money to hire someone who really knows what they're doing? Because SaaS is not something that I think these days that beginners can just dive into and do it right. Even if you can get an app built and you can throw it up on a $10 shared hosting account, you don't know how to do the security, the privacy, the backups, all this other stuff. So if you don't have any experience with it, I'd encourage you to go get the experience or to get enough money to hire someone who's really solid at this and who can build a SaaS app right. So those are kind of the three elements that I think about when if someone were to be deciding whether to build SaaS or not.
Well, I think it's interesting to note that when you look at those three things, not one of them was directly on our list of benefits or drawbacks. It's all about the user's interaction with the software, and has very little to do with the ancillary stuff like, is it secure? Is it, do they have to support upgrades or installations? It's all about the functionality, and can you get to the market with that type of product, and, are you going to be able to compete with it?
Right. Well, I think some of them play into it, right? The privacy, security, and the backups play into the expertise part.
Yeah, but I think that that's more of a perception issue that may very well be left over from legacy apps that people are already used to in that space, for example.
I don't know that it's just perception, though. I actually think that truly having privacy, security, and backups is important, right? Not just the perception of having good privacy, security, and backups. And to do that, you have to have expertise in SaaS. I mean, you have to know what you're doing to do it right.
Right, but I'm talking about the user's perspective of them being comfortable with that sort of thing. So, for example, if you're going after manufacturers, for example, manufacturing in general, they want everything in-house. They want it local because that's what they understand and they're comfortable with. And if you come out with a SaaS app for something that would replace something that they already have a desktop app for, I think you would have a very difficult time going into that market just because they're not used to that kind of thing. So you're going to have a much harder sale, even though the app might be better.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. And I think for the record, I've said this before, probably on this podcast, but definitely in talks that I've done, that personally, I will never build a non-recurring app again. Now, it may not always be a SaaS app, because you could build like a cloud app that's recurring, or and there are other ways. But for me, having done business with one-time purchases, with stuff I have to install on people's computers, all that outweighs any of these other benefits that I get from those things. So I will purposefully only select ideas where I don't have to build an app that installs on other people's software, where I have to support that, and where there's only a one-time sale and I don't have recurring fees.
And I think that's something that you take into account way, way before you even start writing code.
That's exactly right. That wraps us up for today. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.